Sit back, relax, and raise a glass, for spirits coming from the past. Sip on salt while your skin falls with your pre-haunting host having a ball. Your favorite pools. Gather the others, no hesitating. The moment's approaching, it's now time to sing. Hogs and hogs, hogs and hogs, crack open the can and fill to the top. Hogs and hogs, hogs and hogs, this is your podcast and it's called Hogs and Hogs.
No matter where in the world you are joining us from, welcome back to our realm. This is the Haunts and Hops podcast. We cover all things paranormal while sipping on heavenly craft beer from Tavor. Shout out to our sponsor, Tavor. Follow us on all social media at Haunts and Hops. My name is Johnny LaQuasto. You can follow me at Jay Quasto on all socials. But let's get to, well, one of the stars of the show. She is certified in paranormal investigation and cryptozoology. She's interacted with spirits since childhood. She's a triple threat. She's hilarious. She is Anastasia Washington.
Oh, well, thank you, kind sir.
Oh, you're going to be a Southern Belle right now.
For the moment, we see.
I do declare.
I do declare.
So, conspicuous by our absence right now is Ashley Trobe. We hope she's going to join us.
I'm Ashley. I was just trying to.
That was a really good impression.
I'm Ashley. Nope.
Hate you for that one.
Yeah, she's going to real. It's going to be. It's not going to be good for me.
First off, follow at Tavor. They are our amazing sponsor. If you sign up for Tavor after your first $20 on your first crate, you will get $10 added to it on us. So follow at Tavor and use the code HAUNTS10. Anastasia, what beer do you have this evening?
Ooh, well, I have McLeod Ales. The Lion, the Witch, and the Warmer.
Do tell.
It is definitely like a stout, very heavily coffee based. It's 7.2% alcohol by volume. Yeah, it's very like thick stout with like a little bit of like Christmas candle in it, and I dig it. I dig it. You know, it's like if a Christmas candle just melted in your drink a little bit.
Well, what flavor of Christmas candle are we talking about?
We're talking about like that nutmeggy cinnamon kind, you know?
Oh, I'd eat that candle for sure.
Yeah. So like it's very edible, stouty, candle like. And I give it a 4.6.
That's a good rating right there. What's it taste like? A candle. It's amazing.
It tastes like if a candle melted into your drink, but you didn't hate it. That's what it tastes like.
That should be a review on Tavor. This is from Standard Brewing. It's called Enemy of the Sun. It's a blend of barrel-aged imperial stouts aged 15 months in Westland Distillery peated whiskey barrels and then aged 9 months in Elijah Craig 10-year-old oak. That seems like a lot of effort, but it's 11%, and it is fantastic. I mean, if you're giving yours a 4.6, I think I owe them at least that much. Because so much care went into this lovely Standard Brewing Enemy of the Sun.
It's peaty.
Mm-hmm.
Which peat is partially dead animals and people, so.
Which is perfect for the podcast.
Yeah, it's perfect.
So go to Tavor, use the code HAUNTS10, hook yourself up with some money on your first crate of beer. But let's get to our very special guest. He is a paranormal tech specialist, formerly of the show Haunted Collector. You now see him every single week on a show that I watch every single week on the Travel Channel called Paranormal Caught on Camera. Make sure to check out his website, www.neverstopsearching.com, to learn more about him and hashtag Paralosophy, which we're about to get into. He is the great Ryan Cano. How are you, sir?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's wonderful. We wish Ashley was here right now, but yeah, we're grateful to have you.
I'm here.
So, Brian, before we get into everything you're doing, which is a lot, we have a little weekly segment we call the Supernatural Scoop. Would you like to join us for that? And then we'll get into Paralosophy, Never Stop Searching, and then some Haunted Dolls.
Sounds awesome.
All right, here we go. It's time for the Supernatural Scoop. We're going to be discussing Haunted Dolls. This story was very entertaining about a week and a half ago. Annabelle. apparently escaped, according to Wikipedia, according to trending worldwide on Twitter. Rumors swirled that the doll escaped from the Warren Occult Museum in Monroe, Connecticut, when in actuality, Annabelle hasn't even been there since 2019 when the museum closed for zoning violations. But, you know, the internet's going to internet, especially in 2020.
The internet is going to internet. That is the greatest quote. I think it was really funny that the article had the wrong Annabelle in the picture. It had that creepy movie doll that
what
nobody...
What's amazing is how different the movie Annabelle is versus... I mean, the real Annabelle, Brian, if I recall, is essentially a Raggedy Ann doll.
Exactly. It is. It's a Raggedy Ann doll. So there's many like it, but not quite like her.
Now, what do you know about Annabelle? Because she's arguably the most popular haunted doll in history, maybe?
Well, you know, when it comes to haunted objects, I feel like there is a grain of truth at the heart of each legend. So you have Robert the Doll, you have Annabelle, you have all these different examples of these notorious, mostly inanimate objects that can really ruin your day if you cross them. And I'm the type who, even if I don't necessarily put a lot of stock into it, and if I don't believe it 100%, still, just in case, I wouldn't mess with Robert the Doll. I wouldn't mess with Annabelle. Like, in that case that says do not touch, I wouldn't touch it. I wouldn't go near it. And there are people who, you know, sometimes incorrectly ask John Zaffis, hey, when are you going to bring Annabelle out? He's like, well, I don't have Annabelle. It's back with the Warrenology. And even if, you know, I had access to it, it would never leave that vault. It would stay there, and it's there for a reason. And I think you let sleeping dogs lie.
Is Robert encased? I thought, like, the last time I saw Robert the Doll on something, that he was said to have been running around some hotel or something.
I don't, Robert is as Robert does.
He's one of the ones that, like, broke up a marriage. You know, he's complicated.
Well, my question to you, Brian, is Annabelle is currently in the possession of the Warren's son-in-law, Tony Spera. He put a video out on YouTube saying, hey, Annabelle's right here. She didn't go anywhere. She's right here. So he's got it somewhere. I don't know if it's in his house or maybe a back house. Would you feel comfortable even having something like that in your vicinity, on your premises, even if it's in a glass case? I wouldn't. This guy doesn't seem to be very concerned. Is that because of financial reasons or just because he's not afraid?
I mean, I can't speak to what Tony Spera does or doesn't think, but I mean, it would be an interesting piece of PR where this proof of life, oh, hey, she's here. But meanwhile, when the camera shuts off, he starts to panic and he's got those five or six Annabelle stand-ins because it's a Raggedy Ann doll. So who's to say that that was Annabelle? Maybe she's out there somewhere. Maybe he got a note the day before saying, if you ever want to see her again, you will pay this much. Like, we can make a really interesting conspiracy theory here. But honestly, I mean, if I had the real Annabelle in my possession, it would get locked up. Big deal. I don't make any money off of it. But that's notorious entity or whatever power may or may not be within it doesn't get released to the world.
Yeah. The Warrens even claimed Annabelle, I think one of the most famous claims by the Warrens, that they think the doll caused their brakes to fail when they first brought Annabelle home for the very first time.
No, that happened. I mean, it's not my tale to tell, but I was secondarily present. We were at a convention in Gettysburg many years ago. Me and Ziggy were hanging out, and he gets a call from someone maybe about an hour and a half away, who has a collection of dolls, hundreds of dolls. They said, all right, you got to get these out of here. Come get them. He goes, he takes a break in the convention. He leaves. He doesn't come back for hours, like maybe three or four. And we all start to worry, and we're like, okay, when he finally got back, we're like, all right, you know, Ziggy, what happened? His brakes went out. He had great problems shuttling these dolls back. Yeah, strange things happen. And I guess the energies that settle upon things, not to mention the energies that we add to it constantly by invitation or the acknowledgement of these forces.
I guess at least with Annabelle, you can understand why somebody would keep Annabelle. Like, I look at Annabelle and I think, oh, I had
a Raggedy Ann doll. Most people do. But when I look at like Robert the Doll or even some of these other ones, I'm like, why did you pick that up? It's not even cute. Like, it's just scary from the get. You know?
And is there any rhyme or reason to why a certain doll gets inhabited by a certain spirit? I mean, I would assume there isn't really any rhyme or reason. Maybe it's just location and timing.
I mean, if it's something that develops over time as, say, an abundance of residual energy that gets deposited until it finally maybe gains sentience or something like that, it could just be a ticking time bomb. But if it's something that's intelligent that selects the vessel, that's psychology of spirits. I mean, we don't know why anyone does anything. So I feel like its outward appearance is not always what's going on inside. You can have the most innocent looking item be something very, very dangerous, and something that looks really garish might have nothing attached to it. So, I mean, just in spending time in John's museum, looking around, if you didn't know the place was haunted, you might just think he was a hoarder. But some of the things in there, just getting close to the shelf, you feel uneasy. And other things you wouldn't think twice of picking it up, and oops, ooh, it's haunted. Who knew?
Definitely something that we're going to talk about more in this episode, some of the most notorious haunted dolls. But let's get into, number one, your website, Never Stop Searching. But tell us a little bit about what paralosophy is all about, because I know you take really the scientific approach. And what I like about paralosophy is that it's simple. It says, do the work. If you want proof that there's paranormal activity, if you want proof that paranormal is real, because a lot of people are skeptics, and you know, there's healthy skeptics and there's those who just deny everything. But right. You like to do the work to prove, yeah, this is exactly real.
The basic tenet of paralosophy, and that the term itself is just a playful mashup of paranormal and philosophy. And I threw a hashtag in front of it just, again, to be playful, because everything now is hashtag something. Yeah. So the basic tenet of paralosophy is think more, do less. 52 weekends out of the year, you have black shirt paranormal teams running around every state, every country, running and doing and asking questions, and we got to go on an investigation, and they're doing. But we haven't really advanced. In the past 10 years, the paranormal field has not evolved one bit. And maybe just going through the motions, but all that data we're collecting isn't properly being processed. So by saying, think more and do less, I stole that from carpentry. Measure twice, cut once. And we have to think about why we do the things we do. Why do we use EMF meters? Oh, because Zach uses it. No, doesn't matter. Why are we using them? Are we detecting the right anomaly? You know, maybe we have to be using Geiger counters. Maybe we have to do just the magnetic field and not the electromagnetic field. I mean, there's so many things to take into account, because yeah, we have flashier equipment now with more lights and more TMs and Rs on them, but we're not getting any closer to defining textbook-wise what causes a haunting, what indicates a haunting, what to do when you have measurements of such. And it's tough, because we're all crawling in the dark, you know, looking for these answers, but we're the upshot to it, we are gaining a lot of anecdotes, and anecdotal evidence is important. You can't share it. I can't give it to you. It's something that you have to take on faith. And to be honest, that's what we deal in. There's no photo. There's no video. There's no audio clip I can show you that you can say, oh, this is definite, because the very basic fault of it, you weren't there. So you have to trust me that I'm either doing it accurately or not trying to pull a fast one on you. So if it comes down to faith, anything is up for grabs, you know?
Yeah. I mean, are you in the philosophy that we just need to be trying different techniques at this point too? Is that kind of what you're saying, like, stop, think of the origin of these things, think of the reason why we're using these things. Are they even relevant anymore? Can we use new things? Is that kind of what you're thinking? Or
I think it's good, like, you know, you go online and people, in an effort to pump themselves up, not in necessarily a bad way, but to really sound official. And again, there's a lot of people running around trying to help people. And I'm thinking, like, well, who are you helping? You don't have a handle on what you're doing. So take a step back and pick an ology, sociology, psychology, theology. Immerse yourself in it. Get to know it. Because, again, the paranormal and the pursuit of these answers isn't hard, cold science. It will never be replicated in a laboratory setting, which the skeptics and everyone at the Skeptical Inquirer is, you know, gnashing their teeth like, ooh, this is stupid. But it's just a fact. It's the human condition that we as a race, we as a species, we're all different. We're all unique. So how can anything be repeated? Like, okay, just to even prove that you are speaking to someone via ITC, what formula can I devise to equate that? So, all right, if I broke myself down into binary numbers, 1110, 1110, how many ones and zeros would I have to change to make you?
Or
make you?
Sure.
It's an impossible thing. So trying to be the cold lab technician scientist about it, saying, all right, we're going to replicate this. Like, yes, there is importance in that. But the study of the paranormal is the study of people. It's the study of us. So we have to be personable. We have to be aware that we're not tracking weather patterns. We're not doing a geological survey. We're trying to connect with personalities. And as such, you have to remember to act a certain way. You have to act respectful. You have to act in a way where you're not barking orders or you're not demanding too much. Because, all right, imagine someone came into your house and said, hey, what's your name? How long have you lived here? You know you're dead? You get a pop in the mouth. So
we say that all the time, is that, and I understand it makes for good television if you think so, but right, it's treat them like they're people, because they were. And you're going into whatever area or whatever household they happen to be inhabiting, and you're a visit. Yeah.
I mean, I do place some of the blame on television, because, again, we know what gets ratings and we know what's entertainment. But that's the thing. The shows have no responsibility to teach or to train. It's entertainment. Right. The people who emulate it, it's their failing when all they do is copy it. And you know, you watch Paranormal Caught on Camera. Usually the first clip out of most of the shows is like an investigation, like a team investigation clip. You know, that's when you'll usually see the traditional ghost hunts. After three seasons, we're airing our third season right now. I tweeted the other day, I said, we get a lot of these videos to watch. I would be interested to see the videos that we would get if our television shows were organized a different way, so that if they had to emulate something different, how would their process change?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I do when I do personal events and I run my own events. I show them that there's an alternative to the way it's done on TV. And again, don't get me wrong. I love the shows, watch the shows. There's nothing wrong with it. Just don't let that be your only education.
And that's always the same. It's always the same kind of show that we kind of are seeing. It seems like there are some different ones and I respect those, but like the majority of them are like that. And I think respect is just as important and just as entertaining, in my opinion.
And I like the fact that you mentioned, you know, it's the study of people, which a lot of people don't, I think a lot of people kind of get lost in that fact. Like your website's really cool, to where you had the two separate experiments to kind of explain the procedure and the thought process of paralosophy. I thought that was awesome. The fact that you took that kind of time, because you say, do the work. Well, here you go. Here's two experiments that kind of prove what it means to do the work before you go further. And I think, it's time consuming, but I would imagine it's much more rewarding.
Well, that's again, like when I do events, I tell people straight out, okay, nothing might happen tonight, but here's what we're going to do. Don't worry about what happened on whatever ghost show last week. Don't worry about what happened when I was here. Doesn't matter. This is a unique opportunity. And this tonight, we're here. It's the only time it's going to be like this, because you're here now. Don't try to emulate what you saw on TV, because then you're just living someone else's experience. Live your experience. And if it doesn't line up, that's okay. You know, if you want the same experience, you go to an amusement park and go on a roller coaster. That's the same every time. And it's a thrill. If you want real evidence, real experience, it's going to be yours and it's going to be unique.
And I would imagine that's kind of how you lead your events. Like, for example, September 5th, Pennhurst Asylum, one of the most infamous asylums in the United States. So you're going to be basically leading an overnight. You have obviously a great relationship with whoever is in charge of Pennhurst Asylum, and anyone can essentially join. Is that correct?
Yes. This year I'm partnering up with Pennhurst Asylum to do a hopefully series of hunts for the season, but the first one is kicking off on September 5th. You can get your tickets at PennhurstAsylum.com, and it's going to be from 7 to 3. So you're going to have quite a time. You're going to have enough time to explore the buildings and the tunnels and the different areas of Pennhurst, and you'll get time with me. And this is where I will take you beyond the shows. I'll lead you through my experience from having been at Pennhurst many times. And invariably, I always tend to learn something from the attendees also, either through a process, an experience, or just, again, our shared time there together. Yeah. I feel like Bob Ross when I say that sometimes. It's like, happy, happy little ghosts. It's together, happy.
Hey, it's the kind of vibe we're going for here. So
I love it. Who doesn't want a happy ghost?
Happy ghost. Let's just put a happy ghost right here.
Yeah. Yeah,
you can hear that, Annabelle, wherever you are.
Don't call her.
Yeah, I see. If I see a doll running through the field, I'm out of there.
you mentioned you've been to Pennhurst many times. Is there any incident to you that really sticks out that you might be able to enlighten us with?
I've made friendships over the year, and it's funny because you can pick a paranormal place, a haunted location across the country, across the world, and more often than not, I've been there, but I don't hunt there a lot because I've forged relationships with the people. When I go there, like for instance, this weekend, I've got a private Lizzie Borden event. Lizzie Borden. Well, yeah, usually I go to Lizzie Borden, not to investigate, but to hang out with the owners because, again, I've forged these relationships. And again, it's about people. Mm-hmm. But at first, I think the coolest thing that happened to me there was paranormal, but not in the way you think. This happened last year at the very hot, the very sweaty Pennhurst Paracon 2019. I had cause to lead a group through some of the outside areas, and we happened upon, I think it was either the playground or the pool. No, it was the pool. When I lead groups, I show them some tech, but lately I've been showing them some old school methods. I took out my pendulum and I said, all right, guys, I'm going to show you this method of doing things. It's binary. It's either yes or no questions or A or a B. I can't tell you exactly how it works because honestly, I don't know for sure. There's many theories, but we're going to give this a try. And what I learned, it had happened before. It had happened a few times in Ireland. It happened a few times when I was in Australia a couple of years prior to that. But it really cemented in my mind this time at Pennhurst that, all right, as I was asking questions about things that were going on there, I was getting spirit coming through for some of the people that were with me. And I said, hey, and this is a question I ask a lot. I say, all right, do you have a message for anyone here? Started going back and forth. Yes. Oh, okay. Is it a man or woman? Well, is it a man? No. Woman? Yes. And I narrowed it down to the point where we figured out that someone's parent had come through. I think it was their mother, had a message for them. They had died. They were sick, and there was kind of unresolved business, pretty much just the typical, hey, I'm okay. You didn't do anything wrong by me. I'm fine. You don't have to carry this guilt around anymore. And it was a very emotional moment. And while we're looking for evidence, it wasn't the, oh, I died here and I'm haunting the hall. No, it was contact for someone. I was essentially a postman where I was delivering a message saying, hey, this is for you. It wasn't about me. I might have been on the poster, but it was a shared moment that this person felt comfortable enough to say, yeah, I'm going to open up. I'm going to share this personal detail, this personal loss with you. And it was amazing. It was amazing.
Wow. And at Pennhurst Asylum of all places. That is incredible. Well, tell us, you mentioned about doing events, obviously September 5th, Pennhurst Asylum, get your tickets, but you're also about to start, which I can only imagine how much work went into this, the History of the Paranormal Mobile Exhibit Tour, and you actually have your first date lined up.
I'm excited. I'm nervous. This, I mean, we're in August right now. This should have been the premiere anyway, should have been in the rear view. This was originally slated to happen back in May, but obviously COVID made the world a little different this year. But
yeah, just a little.
Finally, it's coming through. And I have this exhibit, a mobile exhibit called The History of the Paranormal. And again, much like Paralosophy, I want to challenge people to think differently. But in this case, I want them to know certain facts, certain details about this interest that we all love and share, and that the paranormal existed before 2004. So,
what?
I'm shocked. I knew this would be news, but yeah, you know, there was, you know, the spiritualist movement, Harry Price, Edward Swedenborg. There was a whole line of people that generally a lot of people don't know their names. And honestly, sometimes I forget it too, and I'll have to go and I'll give myself a refresher. But this exhibit is meant to provide people the foundation. And it's not a haunted museum. It's not a museum, a traveling museum of weird things. Like, you know, other people are doing that. I don't need to. They're doing well enough without me. So this is, and I mean, it's, I hate saying that it's educational because that's like boring, but I want to educate people so that as they go through the exhibit, if they leave with one fact in their head, and then they tell that to someone, and then they tell that to their group, and names like the Fox Sisters and
Fox Sisters
and all these other things get out there and are known, we all advance. We all get better. And because I want it to be entertaining as well, I have a lot of interactive things. So there's a Xena card station where you could sit and do your Xena cards parapsychology tests in a couple of wavy lines, you know. And there's going to be a tarot card station, the crowdsourced photo evidence area. I made this mural, it's a piece of artwork using everybody's submitted photograph, different parts, and literally every day that I've been home from the quarantine, and when I'm not at work, I'm making, I'm designing, I'm building, and it's going to premiere at the Merchants and Drovers Tavern Museum in Rahway, New Jersey. The first day is going to be the Saturday where the exhibit will open. People can come in, and that night we're going to do an investigation of the Tavern Museum and the adjoining cemetery. And joining me on that one is Beth Ezzo from season one of Haunted Collector. So it's a little mini reunion. And on top of that, this is the icing on the cake. We've got Thor the Impala coming. It's the supernatural car. So we're gonna get to take pictures and in it and in the cemetery. And I just want it to be fun. I want it to be a fun celebratory day of something we love.
And when is this date happening?
This is September 19th and 20th. The hunt will be on the 19th. That's a Saturday. The museum exhibit will be open on the 19th and the 20th. And this is just the first stop. This is September. So in October, I'll be going into Pennsylvania, to Norristown, Pennsylvania, at Summer Mansion. November, I'll be coming back home to Staten Island to the Kreischer Mansion. Mansions, I'm gonna pamper myself.
Yeah.
Or December and 2021, but I want people to see this, get excited by it, and then say, hey, Brian, when are you going to bring it to my place?
Yeah. I'm wondering when you're coming to Cali. Come on. You're giving legitimacy to the history of paranormal. And it's been in our, it's always been here for humanity's exploration of paranormal. It has been since the dawn of us. And I just, it's really nice that you're exploring that and even giving people maybe a glimpse into like maybe like the Fox Sisters, showing women have been doing this for a long time. So I applaud you for that. That's really awesome.
I wrote a little skit for the Fox Sisters, and I got three actresses I know. I cast them into the parts. They showed up to the set already in costume. I was amazed. And I recreated that famous photo of the three of them. And when you walk through the exhibit, there's a video screen, but I put it in a frame. And actually, it looks a little something like this. And when the, when I turn it on, they'll be on here. You think that it's just a still image, but after X amount of time, it's going to play on a loop. They start talking. And I wrote this whole scene where the sisters are, you know, they're about to take this photo, and they're bickering with each other about how, you know, they started the spiritualist movement. No, they didn't do that. The Pope, the Aaron and the other, the popes did. It's like, oh, well, we got caught up in it. You sold me out. And they're bickering and they're fighting. But meanwhile, they're aware that the audience is there. So at one point they address the audience. So if you're walking by and they're like, oh, look alive, girls, we have company. It's like a picture just talked. And again, in the form of a little skit, it's like a 2-3 minute skit. I'm trying to deliver this information about who they were, what they did. And any good entertainment hides learning under the surface so that you don't know you're being taught.
Love it. I love it.
Seriously. I mean, here's the thing. Anyone listening to this loves the paranormal. So I think if you love anything specific like this, you want to know the history of it. So the fact that you're combining the two is brilliant, because I'll be perfectly honest, I don't know nearly as much history as I would like to know. And so this is something that I would be completely on board for. So September 5th, Penhurst Asylum, September 19th and 20th, Rahway, New Jersey. Obviously, they can go to neverstopsearching.com for all the info, because I've been to the website. It's got everything on there.
As long as people have a good time, I'm happy.
Of course.
That's awesome.
And let's talk haunted dolls now, because you're the perfect person to have on the show. And that's why we said, hey, let's make it a themed episode a little bit. We got Brian on the show. Let's talk about some haunted dolls. There's some notorious ones. We already talked about Annabelle. I know, Anastasia, you have a solid choice, so go right ahead.
Oh, you mean the one that haunted me as a kid?
Please.
Oh, yeah. I was actually talking to my mom about it because I had questions, because I was, like, you know, pretty young. But I think I was around 4 or 5, and somebody gave me this, like, musical clown doll. And it, like, terrorized me because it would just go off in the middle of the night and go ding, 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 and whatever the song was, like, over and over and over again. And I would, like, I was already a freaky child, as we've established in this podcast. So my mom was used to me going, hey, there's something moving or something talking to me. So eventually we did have to get rid of the doll. I got rid of the doll and all my dolls at a certain point, because I was just so creeped out by this doll. My mom was trying to recall even who gave it to me. And that person has since passed, but hadn't passed at the time. So, yeah, I don't even know the backstory of, but I know she was obsessed with clowns, and I hate clowns. Like, I hate them, but I put it in my room, because I was that kind of kid. I was like, I'm going to be respectful. Somebody gave me a gift. So I let it creep me out into oblivion. So yeah, no. That's, yeah, that was my clown doll story. I've been trying to find a picture of it too.
That's a double whammy. It's a doll and a clown.
Yeah.
Two things that separately are pretty creepy, but together, yeah. You had a chance.
No, I didn't. And it played music. Oh. So, you know, it was like one of those musical things, and it would kind of go like this every time it played the song. And like, nobody's winding this doll up. You have to like wind it. Like, listen, in the past, you guys, if you're young people, there's these toys where you have to wind them, and they weren't automatic. There was like no digital aspect to it. So I don't know. I mean, maybe you could have said, like, I live in California and Los Angeles, so maybe some kind of seismic activity that was doing it. I don't know how you could. That's the only explanation I could kind of do it. Or my older sisters were torturing me, which is also possible. But I don't think so.
At this point, they would have probably been honest with you about it.
Oh yeah, they've been very honest about the time they snuck into my room with an elf mask, so why wouldn't they say that?
Yeah.
It's a very, very long con that they're not ready to give up yet.
maybe
This clown, was it a musical only, because you mentioned talking to you, because I know you said in the past that when you were a little kid, you were like 5 years old, you essentially saw apparitions and you were in contact with spirits.
I'm a weirdo. Yeah.
So did this thing, was it only musical? Because I'm thinking like an old school wind up box, but did it also speak?
No, it just kind of like sang like a music box. So like no words, just kind of like, it's kind of like a wind up doll that just would move when it sang, when it played the little, like that really, I don't know, that like generic music box sound.
Sure.
It was just horrible. I was scared of clowns until about 3 years ago. like deadly scared of clowns. I punched a few in my life. And it wasn't until 3 years ago that I was like, I just don't want to be afraid anymore, that I got over it. I literally was like, I just don't want this over me anymore. And I stopped then and there. So, but I do think it was possibly because of that doll that the phobia did happen.
Uh-huh. Did most of this activity happen during the middle of the night, if you remember?
Always at night. But as I've said on the podcast before, I was a very disruptive sleeper. Like I used to like talk to things at night and sleepwalk and jump and do weird stuff. Because again, I was a creepy child. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to what it was, but it was definitely not a cool thing.
You're such a well-adjusted adult, so we're all set.
Thanks. I got into stand-up comedy because I'm well-adjusted.
So, Brian, have you ever heard of Letta the doll?
Letta the doll?
L-E-T-T-A.
I don't believe I have.
Oh, I have a story for you. All right.
Lay it on me.
Letta the doll, a.k.a. the nickname of this doll is Letta Me Out. This thing, it's from Australia. A child-sized doll, said to be about 200 years old. It's made of carved wood and real human hair. People believe that based on the nails on his shoes, it's believed that Letta was handcrafted by wandering gypsies in Eastern Europe. And I have some photos for you. Enjoy.
Oh, man. Yeah, no.
It looks like a leprechaun or something.
It has to go. It's got to go.
It's gotta go.
Well, the owner loves it. The owner is a gentleman named Perry Walton, claims to have found Letta in the 1970s, I believe, while exploring a deserted home in Wagga Wagga, Australia. The doll has been known for shifting positions, making scuff marks on the floor, giving kids nightmares, making dogs turn aggressive. At one point, he tried to sell Letta, only to find that when he tried to get Letta out of the car, he couldn't physically remove the doll from the car. And now he's become so attached. They actually go on tour together. They've made numerous television appearances. They think maybe it's the spirit of a boy who drowned. To me, that seems like a way more...
Why is it always somebody that drowned? Maybe they just died happily and they just want to be in a doll. You know, you never know.
This was just a roommate situation gone wrong. It's like, look, guys, you gotta pull your weight. You gotta go. Out of the car, put you in the dunny. Doll said, nope. You're back in, go pay your way, and you start earning in the money, and money talks.
That's true. Now they're great roommates. They're like the odd couple. But I have to address one of the things that this doll is accused of is giving children nightmares. Like, that's not paranormal. That's just normal. Yeah.
The doll looks like an evil Mo Howard. And that's scary. Like, he looks like he's scheming, like, you know, I'm going to take your candy. I'm going to steal your identity. I'm going to change all your passwords.
Look at his shoes. Oh, Lord.
He is the kind of person that would change all your passwords.
Respectfully, of course, because I don't, you know, if we're going to do like the Robert the Doll type thing, it's like, okay, I mean, no disrespect, Letta. You know, my passwords are yours.
Is Letta a girl?
No, Letta is a boy doll.
Okay. I just didn't know because Letta to me kind of sounds like a female name, but I was like, that doesn't look like a female. But you know what? You know, whatever you want to, he, she, her, they, whatever. You go,
doll.
Doll
identifies as scary.
Yes, that is definitely an accurate depiction.
They think it was made by wandering gypsies, and the fact that the doll has human hair. There's got to be of course it's going to be haunted. Where'd the hair come from? We don't know. We'll never know.
But I'm not sure that that's an uncommon practice because, you know, like even George Washington's teeth were made out of human teeth and hippopotamus teeth. So. That was our president's mouth.
Yeah, that's a good point. One more doll we got to talk about. And I don't know much about this doll, but it's the famous Robert. He's a sailor. Brian, do you know anything about Robert?
Only by reputation that he is very particular in the respect that if you don't pay attention to him, if you don't give him respect, if you are flipping around him, he takes vengeance in some unknown form. A lot of negative things, bad luck that has happened, people have attributed to him. I've never seen him. I haven't been around him. Obviously, I've seen him on TV many times, but it's one of those things where you could see it happening, where a skeptic or disbeliever will be like, oh, come on, this doll isn't going to do anything, and then on purpose do something taunting or disrespectful. And if I said, hey, my couch pillow is haunted, you'd be like, oh, yeah, sure, it's my bed, it's haunted. You would do it innocently enough, and then the next week when your house burns down, you'd be like, oh, Brian's pillow. And
Brian's pillow.
Should have known better. Here's the thing. I wonder if this is a manifestation of thought form. And it's not so much the doll, but the reputation that has risen up about him, like his, the truth and hype are probably very different. So I encounter this when I do hunts for the public all the time, where when you show up, you're in the mindset. So every sound, every breeze, every change in temperature, you're like, oh, it's cold. Oh, it got cold in here. That's because you're thinking about it. It's on your mind. So if you were just walking through the supermarket, or you were commuting or doing something, and those things happened, that stimulus occurred, you wouldn't consider it paranormal, but because you're in that mindset. So with Robert the doll, you see him today, you see him tomorrow, maybe something happens to you next week. As unlikely as it is, you're going to think, oh, it was Robert, and attribute it to him with no proof whatsoever. But it fits in with what other people have told. And now, because you have a story to tell, it's interesting to those people. And again, it becomes social. It's now a sharing of anecdotes. And
sure,
I mean, that's what history used to be. It used to be just the telling of a story passed down. And of course, when details diverged, it wasn't really a big deal because there was no fact checking. So that's how we got Salem witch trials. That's how we got so many other different stories of hauntings.
Actual history. I mean, we're taught Christopher Columbus was this amazing explorer. I don't even want to get into what a horrible human being he was.
Right.
But
it's narrative. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Anastasia, what do you know about Robert? I believe they said Robert was possibly the spirit of an old sailor or something.
What I know about Robert is that he had kind of a strange beginning, which was that he was given to a little boy and they had kind of an unhealthy bond with each other. And that even when this boy grew up and had a wife and kids, he always gave priority to this doll, and also kind of did not do well with his marriage because the doll was the priority. And if the doll was moved or doing something, or, you know, the doll was disrespected by the wife, things would happen. Again, I feel like that might be slight psychosis, might be like some unhealthy relationship that somebody, you know, had with an item. And that, yeah, like Brian was saying, all these negative things were attributed to it. But since then, I've heard that it does go running down the hallway and doing weird stuff. And I think, I believe that they said that it was kind of like what Child's Play is based on, is supposed to be Robert. I don't know. Yeah. It's, I always thought that was such a strange story. Cause I wonder, like, you know, if your husband was like, hey, I love you, let's get married, but also I have this really old doll and he's always going to be a priority over you, like how hot of a man would he have to be for me to say yes, you know, like what is the date, like what's the year of that I say yes to that situation. I don't know yet, you guys.
That's basically for a point. And Brian, let me go to you on this one. So when it comes to dolls notoriously being haunted over the course of, you know, really, I guess you could say centuries now, looking at things on the paralosophy way, is there any way to scientifically kind of look at why dolls get inhabited by spirits as opposed to, like you mentioned, the pillow or anything like that? Is it because they have often kind of a human form and maybe the spirits are attracted to it?
If we were to examine this, it would ultimately come down to the observer and their norms and the phenomenology of their culture. But what you said definitely makes a lot of sense. And it's definitely part of it that because it's a human shape, it's an approximation of a person, we tend to treat them differently. So you have a doll, and children are trained at a very young age. Here, take care of this like a baby, feed it, dress it. You know, it's almost like, and especially in earlier days, in earlier times when culture was, you know, slightly different, this was your training for later because you're going to have to learn how to take care of a baby.
Right. This was our sack of flour.
Yeah. Or the egg.
Our Tamagotchi.
But here and again, we give it that power in some respects. So yes, this is a chicken and egg situation. Like, which came first? Was the doll haunted and we noticed it? Or did we consider it haunted, thought about it, and infused it with that power? And I mean, as a kid, I didn't respond to dolls that way. But if I had like a stuffed animal, like if I had like a stuffed cat or a bear, I treated it as if it were a living thing. And if it fell on the floor, I would feel bad. I would take it, I'd pick it up, and I'd be like, oh, I'm so sorry. And, you know, when you have pets and you treat them the same way, that's good training for later in life, that you just show respect to all living things. But when it comes to a doll being haunted, I don't think it really comes down to paralosophy. That's more of a philosophical view of it. But in the actual telling, I think that there are so many different reasons that it could become. And again, having been in John's Museum, it's like a Walmart in there, and every single thing is haunted. Every aisle, every item, there's nothing that escapes that telling. But because dolls have eyes that can look at you, hands that can reach out for you, legs that can get it to mobilize to you, right, it's even scarier to us. Because when you're asleep, when you're alone in your bedroom, an item on your shelf, a cross or a snow globe, isn't going to hop down and come get you, but a doll can.
What a way to close out the show.
Yeah.
Can. One letter. But no, yeah, you're right. Wow. Dude, Brian, thank you for joining us once again.
Yeah.
NeverStopSearching.com, September 5th, Pennhurst Asylum, an overnight investigation in one of the most haunted locations in the country. On top of that, the history of the paranormal mobile exhibit tour that is going to be hitting Rahway, New Jersey, September 19th and 20th, along with a paranormal investigation. For nerds like us, that's a one-stop shop.
Yeah.
And I think it just occurred to me, as far as like, all right, I just talked about really recognition and which came first and us infusing energy. I think I know why Ashley isn't here today. Because I remember being at Las Vegas Paracon with her 7 years ago, and I was wearing a Sting t-shirt, and every time she saw it, she was like, And tonight,
oh, you repelled her.
Brian, where can everyone find you on social media?
It's getting more confusing these days because I keep getting imposters that I have to shut down. But on Twitter, I'm at Brian J. Cano, verified, trust the blue check. Mm-hmm. On Instagram, you could find me on Brian J. Cano or Brian underscore J underscore Cano. That's just for my artsy photographs. And anywhere else, I'm just very easy to find, my name and this face.
And we just retweeted his trailer that he just dropped for the mobile exhibit tour. So you can kind of get a nice.
Thank you.
Oh, you can find me at Anastasia W on Twitter, at Anastasia Wash on Instagram, Anastasia TV on YouTube. I probably have a stand-up show coming up because that's what I do. So check out those social medias to find out where the heck I am.
There you go. I am at Jay Quasto on the socials. Of course, follow Ashley Trobe at Ashley Trobe on all social media. September 10 through 12, I'm going to be at the Comedy Caravan in Louisville. It's the only comedy club in Louisville. So if you are anywhere near there, hit me up and I'd be happy to show you how to get tickets. It'll be socially distanced, very safe. Join us at Following Tavor and sign up with the code HAUNTS10. Get yourself $10 off your first crate of beer. Other than that, I think it's time to say goodbye. Brian Cano, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, bye.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, tell a couple of friends and please rate and review the show on whatever platform you're listening on, especially if it's iTunes and Apple Podcasts. We appreciate you.